Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Blog. I'm glad you joined us today. You know, I was kind of remiss about something. I was very well aware of this past month being Gay Pride Month, and every time I did a show, it was in the back of my head to talk about that, and we never did. So I woke up this morning, and I was thinking about different things that have been going on lately, and of course, there's a lot of different things going on right now. There was a terrible plane crash yesterday. 10 people killed on their way from Texas to Florida. There's all these shark attacks that are, I don't know, almost like epidemic proportions right now. And there is, you know, the constant bullying, no matter what we do, no matter what thought people much smarter than I put into motion. You know, it's about personalities and how people get along with each other and who's taught to be open-minded and who's not taught to be open-minded. A lot of extenuating circumstances in all those stories that we talk about on the show all the time. But I saw a lot of interesting comments over the past month on social media in regard to Gay Pride. And I've had many, many conversations with young people who actually are trying to figure out who they are. Sometimes it's confusion. Sometimes it's a little bit of fear. All different reasons as to why you, as you're growing up, question who you are. And, of course, once you realize who you are, there is no question, is the truth of the matter. Once you know who you are, you know who you are. Not that there's not extenuating circumstances, because there always is, even for somebody as old as me. You know, I think I've been thinking some way for so many years, and all of a sudden I'm like, why? Why do I feel that way about that? So let's bring Shell in and let's talk about this a little bit, because recently I've had an opportunity to have discussions with quite a few young people in regard to their feelings on sex, number one, and who they care about and who they are. And sometimes there's confusion, but sometimes there's not. Sometimes they absolutely, positively know who they are, which is kind of cool, I think. Good morning, Shell. How are you?
Good morning, Renee. Good morning, everyone.
So I know Gay Pride was last month, and I'm looking through everything last night and this morning about today's show, and I found more articles about this past month than I did anything else, except for bullying. Of course, bullying is always at the forefront if I Google anything about behavior and different news articles and things like that. There's always something about bullying. But and, of course, I just mentioned on the show, lots of talk about shark attacks, which, you know, eventually, hopefully, somebody much smarter than I can explain why that's happening. I mean, we know they've made movies and everything about the animals taking over and all this kind of stuff, and it gets kind of scary if you buy into other people's imagination, but there is definitely something is going on. I swam in the ocean as a child all the time. It was very rare to hear anything about a shark attack. And but now, almost every day in the news in the last couple months, there's been something somewhere. So, but let's talk about Gay Pride. I would really like to hear, I know I'm putting you on the spot because we didn't talk about this, but I'd like to know how you feel about how a young person recognizes who they are. And have you ever talked to anybody who's in that struggle? And how do you feel about it?
Well, I think it's less confusion over their feelings and more confusion over recognizing the social stigma, which still exists, which astonishes me that it still exists today with, you know, all the knowledge we know about being either heterosexual or homosexual and being genetic and not being a choice and not being immoral and all this other nonsense. It just is, it's the way we are genetically. You know, so I think some of the confusion comes from feeling a way that you recognize isn't going to be acceptable socially. I also think bisexuals can experience confusion because they're feeling both attractions. I have found more confusion among people that ended up being bisexual than I did amongst people that were either heterosexual or homosexual. If you have a gay man or a gay woman, they generally know that even before they go to puberty. They just know they feel different at a younger age. You know, people are women are talking about, oh, when you get when you become an adult and you get married and, you know, you walk down the aisle with your husband and all that, and they have, that doesn't do anything to them. But when they think about being with another woman, that does. So usually straightforward, and this has been my experience, and some of the psychology books I've read kind of agree with this, but usually if you're just either gay or heterosexual, it's pretty prominent, and you can't imagine feeling on it any other way. Bisexuality is actually on the rise, and again, this is genetic. It has to do with the hormones that are released during pregnancy and how the fetus develops and things like that. So it's not a choice. But bisexuality is a third level of genetic markers and actual the way that the brain is constructed and things like that. So it's very physiologically based. You know, when they say it's all chemistry between two people, that's true. It's chemistry. It's how our hormones and everything else are laid out. And that happens when we're a fetus. We have no control over that. So I find more confusion amongst bisexuals because they're like, well, I am attracted to a man, but I am also attracted to a woman. I think that's where the confusion comes from. Someone in my own family is bisexual, and they're married now to a man. But in the beginning, they had some confusion. They went back and forth between, you know, dating a girl and then dating a guy and then dating another girl and then dating another guy and then ultimately marrying a man. And the man she married, she met through the LGBT movement, and he also is bisexual. So they have a wonderful relationship because they understand each other. But they both had a little confusion in the beginning because of the fact that they kind of had attractions in both directions. So that's where I'm finding most of the confusion. And with somebody who's straightforward, just either lesbian, or gay man, or a lesbian woman, I don't think it's as much confusion as it is not wanting to go there if they recognize a level of disapproval within their close circle of family and friends. Say they have family and friends that openly speak out against homosexuality, maybe even talk about it as being immoral or something like that. So those people aren't so much confused as they are conflicted, because they're trying to figure out how to be true to themselves but not upset their close circle of friends. So that's been my experience with dealing with people and also some of the psychological studies I've done.
Well, and I agree with everything you just said. And, of course, I, like I said, I've had many, many conversations. And you used the word confusion. And that's been my response to some of the young people who talk to me as honestly as they can and tell me, you know, about different feelings and how this seems to make more sense to them than that. And I listen and I say, I get it. I get it. But I also think that you're confused. And sometimes they don't like that response from me. And I say, I'm not telling you you're stupid. Confusion doesn't mean that you're stupid and you don't know one thing from another. Confusion means that your feelings and your responses are confused, because I can understand. One of the things that I've heard many, many times is a young girl who's had a bad reaction to a male in their family. And do I think that made them prefer women? No. Not at the end of the day. But do I think that that played in to some of the things and some of the choices that they make while they're in that place? I do. And that's very private, and me thinking it is none of my business. But when they question me and then they fill me in on some of their story, I understand why they're having some indecision, instead of using the word confusion, because I think you know your feelings. I think you know it feels some way about someone or something. But the confusion starts when you analyze it, or when you share it with somebody else and don't get a positive response, like you just mentioned. That's another very tough thing to have happen, especially if the response is from somebody that's supposed to be protecting you or guarding you, your parent, your older sibling, your best friend, maybe. But I know there was a lot of things on social media the past few weeks, and I have a friend that came to Hippocrates years ago, and she's a very awesome character. Let me say that. And she marches to her own drummer, and she participated in the gay pride parades and everything in her town where she lives. And she said, you know, I'm not gay. And she said, but I just respect this so much. And I answered it. And I said, I'm so straight, sometimes my back hurts. But I get it too. And I think it's personal, and I think it's only your business, and I support it totally as well. And I think that's where we have to get, so that there's less unkindness and less judgmentality. But that's what we talk about on this show all the time. I don't know how anybody can judge somebody else because of what they like to wear, who they like to see, what they like to eat. How is that anybody's business but theirs? But that's, you know, that's what we've talked about on this show since the very beginning, is acceptance and no judgment. It shouldn't be up to you. It should be up to, you know, I'm wearing this rainy suit, nobody else. So I have every right to wear this rainy suit however I want to. Period. And that's the way it's supposed to be. But I got to say that I appreciate the recognition now, because I think the more into the light things are brought, the better they are. Don't you agree with that? Did I lose you, Shell?
There you go. Can you hear me now?
Yeah,
phone slipped in my hand, and I accidentally hung up, and I called back in, and I guess you had to unmute me again.
Mm-hmm.
Can you hear me, though?
Yep, you're fine. It just came up across my dashboard that the call dropped, so that's why I clicked you back on.
Okay, good.
So did you hear everything
I
said or no?
No. I called right back in, so I've been listening to the whole thing. And I agree with you.
Okay.
But like you said yourself, probably using a word like conflicted or something like that is better than confused, because it's not confusion. They're feeling what they're feeling. But because if there was no social stigma, if it was completely acceptable, there wouldn't be that pushback against why am I feeling this way. They're saying, oh my God, I'm confused, but they're not actually confused, they're conflicted. Because they know that there's a level of social unacceptance for being non-heterosexual. And so people that go there, unless they're really, really brought up in a very open family, maybe they already have gay family members in that family, or they hear how their family talks about being gay, some people don't have any issues with coming out very, very early on in life, because they're not growing up in that type of environment. They're growing up in a very open family, so they know they're going to be accepted, you know. And so there is no level of confusion there. But a lot of the confusion is actually being conflicted, because they know that they're feeling things that are not what they're told they're supposed to be feeling, but they're feeling it anyway, and they're having this internal conflict between how they're feeling and how they think society or their family is going to accept that. So I think that's probably a more accurate way of describing it, that they're conflicted.
Well, I don't feel that way, honey. I do feel there's some confliction. I don't disagree with that. I'm just talking about the personal things that have been said to me. And in many cases, it is confusion about their feelings, not about what they like, who they like, why they like, things like that. They come to me with confusion. What's wrong with me? Why do I, you know, I like this, but I don't like that. They're really confused. And a lot of times those stories have been exacerbated by their treatment and in some cases their abuse. That's what I'm talking about.
Cases,
I agree with you about the word confliction for some people, for certainly someone that you spoke about. I would agree there totally. But some of the stories I get told, it's because of the way they were treated. It's because of the things that have already happened to them, some of them at a very young age, sadly.
Right. Well, there is a small percentage of society that are homosexual, not based on genetics, but based on environment. So if you're a young man and you've been abused by your mother your whole life, you may actually not want to have a woman in your life. Or if you do have a woman in your life, you may abuse her. If you're a young girl and you've been mistreated or abused or molested by men, in your life, then you may pull away from men and want to be with a woman. So there is a psychological basis to homosexuality and being attracted to the other, to the other sex. When there is no, I would say the vast majority of homosexuality is genetic, but there is a percentage that is based on what we call environmental influences, and that's how you're treated, being raped, being abused, things like that. Where they actually develop an abhorrence for the opposite sex, and they can't form an attraction towards the opposite sex because somebody in a very important role in an opposite sex traumatized them in some way, and they just can't see themselves. Right. Because when you're sexually involved with somebody, you're very vulnerable. So if you have been mistreated by the opposite sex, and it can go either way, there are men who are terribly abused by their mothers. Some of these shows I've watched about some of the evil women that are out there is astonishing that women could actually do some of the things to their little boys that they do is just horrific to me. And a lot of these men will grow up to do one of two things. They either become homosexual because they cannot become intimate with a woman. They just cannot go into that level of vulnerability with a woman. Or they actually grow up to be abusers of women. So it can go either direction. But so you're right. So there is a certain percentage that's psychologically based. But usually when it's psychologically based, because our hormones are so powerful, when it's psychologically based, it's usually as a result of abuse.
That's what I'm saying. And that's where some of the confusion comes in. Because those feelings are really and difficult to work through. And the only time I've ever known anybody to work through them to a degree where they could be who they're supposed to be, they need to be, they think they should be, whatever the reasoning is, they have to be able to talk about it. I just watched, case in point, The Red Dragon, the second movie from the Hannibal Lecter series, where the guy is just so abused by his mother that he tattoos himself and starts killing people and has to become this big monster and everything. And the significance of that movie when it comes to the scars that some people carry because of the abuse that they endure made me think a lot about some of the people that have shared things with me. And I'm always saddened by some of the things people tell me, because I can't imagine treating a child that loves you, that trusts you in that fashion. But I also know that it exists, and it exists a lot more than we'd like to know.
Well, think about John Wayne Gacy. I mean, we all know, you know, the clown killer, mm-hmm. and he killed over,
yep.
they found like 28 or 30 bodies under the basement
yeah,
in
under
his house
building
he lived
yeah.
with his mother.
Mm-hmm.
There's a show I watch about family members. Evil Lives Here. And it's about family members that when they found out that their loved one was a serial killer, they were like, oh, my God, never saw it. You know, how is this possible?
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of serial killers compartmentalize themselves. So when they're with their families, they're loving, they're kind,
they're normal.
And then when that impulse comes for them to kill, they literally become somebody else. And they can actually live this dual life for a long time. That's why sometimes it's so hard to catch them, because they're normal. They participate in society. So with John Wayne Gacy, I never knew this about him. And his sister is horrified by what he did and everything, but she did want to give his background. His father was brutal. His father never touched the girls, but he used to beat him all the time. Anytime John Wayne Gacy was into cooking, he loved cooking. He probably could have been a famous chef if his father had just left him alone, because he loved cooking, and he would cook these big meals for the family. Well, if his father came home from work early and caught him cooking, he would beat him with this belt that had sharp edges on it, and he would like just about cripple him. And the mother would try to stop it. He wouldn't let the mother stop it. So he grew up with this hatred towards his father. And it's just interesting that he became like he developed homosexual tendencies and then started killing, you know, young men and boys, almost like he was killing himself over and over and over again, because this happened to him as a young man. So the psychology that drove him to that is horrifying on one level. But I often wonder if his father had embraced his love of cooking, and because he was very gentle as a child. She said he didn't show any of these. She said when he became the clown, he was always around the family member children. And, you know, and he was awesome with children. He loved being around children, you know, and he didn't murder children. He wasn't like a pedophile. He went after just young teenage boys. So that is a form of pedophilia, but some of the men he killed were in their 20s, so it's not pedophilia anymore. But with him, I think it was more this this relationship, because he was so terrified of his father that he was almost killing himself over and over, that part of himself that embarrassed him, that he couldn't stand up to his father. And there's been some psychological reviews that like go into that whole thing when they analyze his childhood. But I often wonder if his father had embraced that, if he would have grown up to be normal, and he might have been a famous chef somewhere, and, you know, his life would have gone totally different without that abuse when he was so young and couldn't defend against it.
Well, I think that's probably true of a lot of histories. Kind of mad people that you know, the abuse that they were subjected to put them in a place where they were totally out of balance. I do want to say, though, from the very beginning, I read through some different things and kind of the evolution. When I was a little girl, a man that liked a man or a woman that liked a woman was queer. I don't remember hearing the terminology gay until much later in life. And certainly I was, you know, a young adult when I heard the word lesbian and homosexual. Most of the time, I remember my grandmother telling me that she read a story about Cary Grant being queer. And I had absolutely no idea what the hell she was talking about. And she was not one to talk about anything like that. So I just thought it meant he was weird. And I remember watching him in movies and saying, I wonder why Graham thinks he's weird, right? So, you know,
right,
I mean,
right.
We've come a very, very, very long way. But, you know, what year was it? I think it was 69. Let me look real quick. In the very beginning, when they tried to recognize each other and support each other, and the whole idea of Gay Pride or LGBT Pride Month is to take a stance against the discrimination and the violence that is, prevalent. In 2015. They had an LGBT pride parade, and the police used tear gas, rubber bullets, to disperse the crowd. So we're still kind of new at this. I mean, that wasn't very long ago, 2016,
wow.
2015, 2017. So it's still not in a place where where we can be honest with each other. On June 28th in 1969, a riot broke out in the Stonewall Inn. I remember about this vaguely. A gay club in downtown Manhattan. It was called the Christopher Street Liberation Day in March. It was organized to commemorate the anniversary of the Stonewall riots. And, they all walked down the street and they all stood up for what they believe in and everything. And I think somehow, even though it's hard for me to wrap my brain around it, somehow the fear of people seeing something that was different is why a lot of good people, people that would normally be loving and understanding, I kind of lost it. I have to believe that in that time, not today, today everybody should understand what's going on. There should be no violence anymore. And that part is sad. But back then, wrapping your brain around that, especially if you were small town people. Now, if you go to other countries, and I mean, you can go back to the days of the arenas. It was nothing to know about men being with men, according to things that I've read. But then that kind of like, I don't know. It's like aristocrats married family until they realized that might not be such a great idea. So in a lot of ways, we're almost like coming full circle again and understanding that just because, you know, you were born with certain anatomy, that your feelings has to match your anatomy or something. I don't know. I guess I don't have the kind of words I need to express myself, but I feel like, in the very beginning, it seemed to be understandable, and then it got, horrifically verboten, and nobody was, you know, you didn't even talk about it. You kept it secret. People, the closet personification of he's in the closet, she's in the closet, all that kind of stuff. But now we're finally out there again, but there's still the violence for the people who can't, I don't know,
Well, a lot of it's based on religious fanaticism, and unfortunately, things have been added and extracted from the Bible, and literally from every major worldwide religious doctrines. So, if you go back to the original doctrines, that you go back to the original languages, and you have people and read them and interpret them just one time. There's nothing in there against being gay. There's nothing in there against being, you know, women were considered equals, especially in the time of Jesus. A lot of people, just think about how warped the Bible was to hundreds of years after Jesus and Mary died, that Mary Magdalene was then portrayed as a prostitute. When she lived, she was not a prostitute. And for hundreds of years after Jesus and Mary died, there was nothing anywhere written that she was a prostitute. But the powers that be at that time, Emperor Constantine and others, were so enraged because Jesus and Mary were trying to show that men and women were equal, that there shouldn't be this masculine oppression of women. And that's why she almost got stoned that day, because she dared to preach the word of God, and she was a woman. That was even seen as a sin by women who were so overly oppressed by men at the time. Okay, but that story was retold to make it seem like Jesus was defending her because she was dirty, and those among you who aren't dirty as well, you can't stone her and that kind of stuff. That's not what happened that day. And when the Dead Sea Scrolls were found, a lot of the true accounts, because remember, the Dead Sea Scrolls were written by people who were alive when Jesus was alive, who walked in. These were historians like Philo and Pliny and, people like that. These were people that walked with him, or knew about him. They lived at the same time. So they were like the newspaper reporters of the day. They all talked about the fact that she was a priestess. She would walk around and she would preach the sermons. There were actually sections of the Bible written by Mary Magdalene that were removed. So when Emperor Constantine collected up all the Bibles and basically rewrote them, some of those books had already been, one of the things the ancient Essenes were doing is they were collecting up all these manuscripts, and some of them were Buddhist teachings, and some of them were Hindu, and some of them were the Tao religion. It wasn't just, Christianity, because Christianity didn't exist. It was Judaism, but with the understanding of reincarnation and things. Jesus taught all that. Well, that was very, very scandalous to the Roman Catholic Church at the time, because they didn't want people understanding the truth behind our spirituality, our connection to the divine, things like that. Because when you understand that, it inspires people to behave differently. They wanted us to feel badly about ourselves, because people that feel badly about themselves are the people that do things that are hurtful to each other. And we've talked about that on the show. Think about it. When you're happy and okay with yourself, when you feel good about yourself, it's almost impossible to do something mean to another person. Most people that are out there that take advantage of other people, or they're mean to other people or whatever, or judgmental, are usually people that are not happy with themselves. And because they can't process that dissatisfaction with themselves, they have to then turn that out and they defer it onto other people. And it makes them feel justified in tearing other people down or taking advantage of them, things like that. So they wanted to keep the people like that. They didn't want people becoming powerful and understanding who they were. So this whole thing about homosexuality being immoral really didn't even come into the religious purview until I think maybe 200 years ago. They actually pinpointed it in one of the books I read. I probably should have written it down, but now I got to go back and look it up. But they said up until recent history, homosexuality was not looked at as immoral. So why all of a sudden in the modern day, when we're supposed to be becoming so evolved, did we backtrack on something that for thousands of years didn't even have a moral compass on it? Gay men were actually revered, like in the time of Hippocrates and Socrates, you know, all the great philosophers. Mm-hmm. Gay men were revered as being very gentle and creative. They were looked at as the as somebody to look up to in society, you know, both by straight men, by, you know, heterosexual women, by, you know, whatever. It was not seen as being something that was abhorrent or an aberration. It was seen as something that was that they were blessed with a special creativity from God. So they were actually looked as being blessed. So at some point, because the church kept manipulating the doctrines and the teachings to keep a certain level of power over the people, and that's when all of a sudden it became immoral. It was just another level of separating people. And mm-hmm. so when you look at the actual history of it, and there are books that have analyzed this, and I think it should be taught in school, because I think if people understand that this hasn't been the way we've been for tens of thousands of years, that this is something that was newly thrown at us to keep people divided again. You know, let's make sure whites hate blacks. Let's make sure Jews hate Christians. And let's make sure that straight people hate gay people. It just keeps the masses at each other's throat. So a lot of the bigotry we have today has actually been purposely manufactured and delivered to us by people that know how to manipulate, like, the official narrative. And they started putting this out and putting this out and putting this out until it became a common way of thinking. And now we're trying to reverse that damage by being self-aware.
Well, I mean, to a degree, but it's still the way a lot of businesses are run. Divide and conquer, divide and conquer, divide and conquer.
Right,
when
exactly.
I mean, I've only met a handful of men and women who are in a position of power that don't divide to stay, or I'm sorry, that try to make a larger group of people who care about each other, who look out for each other, because they don't fear the group becoming bigger than they are. There's not enough of those kind of self-assured people. We worked for somebody who did that. We worked for somebody who realized that in order to stay large and in charge, there couldn't be any unity with the people that were doing all the labor. And I've watched movies where they, I mean, you know, fictional movies that are just about, you know, keeping everybody at odds with each other.
And that way
those people in charge stay more powerful, because it's just the way of the world. But I do believe that a little bit of that is changing with the Richard Bransons of the world. Every now and then I read a story about a man or a woman who, that's the way I felt about Jim Moran. Jim Moran kept his people there. I mean, he was still the boss. And he still made sure that everybody knew he was the boss. He was, you know, pretty powerful. But he put in babysitters so the women could perform as well as the men without worrying about whether or not the babysitter said the baby can't come today or didn't show up. He put in an exercise gym for his staff members to use whenever they knew they had time to do it. He didn't. And one of the things that killed me, one of his grandchildren were working there, and she's the one who would fill me in on all this stuff. And I said, he does all that for everybody? And they said, yeah, Grandpa thinks that they make better workers when their life is in a better place. And I said, wow, if everybody could just wrap their brains around that instead of feeling like that's taking away some of their power, what it's doing is just giving them, you know, a stronger foundation, period.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I know there are, well, we've talked about Richard Branson many times, and one of his lines that I always tried to live by, I don't know whether I was always successful, but I understood it and I tried to go with it, was that if you treat the people that are doing a job for you well, that's how they treat the guests that they're supposed to be taking care of. I always believe
that. Wasn't that from the New York Hotel? Which one? One of the New York hotels, which is very famous.
The Ritz-Carlton.
The Ritz-Carlton. Isn't that their
yes.
policy?
Yes, that's their mantra.
Yeah, well, when,
but, you know,
well,
a lot of people can't let go of all that power.
Yeah, well, when I worked at TCT, this was years ago, it was an aerospace manufacturing company, and they had flown me out to Connecticut and a couple states because we had plants in other states. Well, one time they sent me out to one of our vendors, and I think the vendor was also in Connecticut. Now, I'm not recalling the state, but I do remember it was a huge machine shop. I mean, it was probably 20 buildings that were all connected, absolutely tremendous equipment, and I had to go there, to find out where our parts are and to, you know, to see the manufacturing environment and things like that. So I was actually going there for like an inspection type of thing. And one of the things that really impressed me about this place is that they did what you're talking about with your friend, Mr. Moran, is that, and it was the first time I had ever seen this because I had not heard of conscious businesses yet or anything like that. But this whole plant, they had a babysitting service there. So they had one room that they always kept manned with caretakers. They always had at least two people there. You had to sign up for it so that they would know how many people they needed on that. But this was every day that they had this little center. And it was a small area of the building, but big enough where you could probably have 20 kids in there, okay? Then they had an exercise gym room with showers. And they also had, if you started working for them and your, barometrics, where they take they take all your physical stats, your blood pressure, your weight, all that kind of stuff.
Right.
Well, if your metrics were out of whack, you're overweight, your blood pressure was high or whatever, if you embarked on a healthy eating program and they had all this information, because I went in the room and they showed you, they had all these pamphlets on the table, you know, eat for your heart, eat for this, eat, you know, and it was good stuff, good information.
Mm-hmm.
Well, anybody that signed up for the program and actually did lose weight or lower their blood pressure or do whatever they said they were going to do, they actually got a bonus. They actually got a money bonus each quarter that they maintained their health. And I said, what an awesome idea. Disney does something different. When I first started with Disney and I got into the health program, anybody that signs up for the health program, you automatically get a $300 deposit into your HSA account. So it's not like money you can spend, you know, on yourself, but it is money you can spend for health reasons. And I think that was a great thing. So there are conscious businesses
out there.
They're still too few and far between. And even some of the businesses that are leaning towards that conscious business aren't doing enough or aren't consistent. So they're acting conscious over here, but they're still acting in a way that's negative towards their employees over here. So they don't have a consistency with all their policies yet. But at least there's a move in that direction. And when I took that course with Humanities team, I know they're still giving the course because I still get emails from them. Anybody that's in business, especially whether you're in business or you're trying to become an entrepreneur or you're over other people, I do highly recommend the course from Humanities team. You can just go on the internet, humanitiesteam.com, and look. It's called a Conscious Business Course. And it's men and women that say that you have to operate business through your heart. And part of it is embracing all people, and they actually say all races, all ethnicities, all religions, and all lifestyles. So they even include lifestyles in their level of respect. They say that the level of diversity in your company is actually going to increase. The higher level of diversity in your company, the higher level of success you can have if you take advantage of that, because different cultures, different genders, different lifestyles look at the world differently. And if you're trying to create a product or a service for the public, and you can get information from within your own company from a diverse world outlook, then you can better serve a community and you can better create products and services that would be good for a greater number of people instead of only being attracted to this part of society or that part of society. So the more and more that companies understand that diversity is a good thing, not a bad thing, the more conscious businesses we start seeing popping up all over the place. So there's definitely a movement that's happening.
Well, I think that one of the things that we've always talked about, no matter what topic we are on, is the fact that listening to other people instead of having, you know, blinders on and thinking that it's your way or the highway is a big mistake.
Right.
I just told the story the other day about hiring all those young men from Better Way in Miami. And they were, and all of them did hard time for some, one man killed a man. And he
wow.
became one of my most loyal employees. But one of the things that I learned with them was when they wanted the job, they just said, I'll do anything. So, of course, the first thing I gave them was like landscaping and maintenance, you know, because
mm-hmm.
that's where my head went. I see these big, strong young men who hadn't had any education to speak of. So I put them doing manual labor. And
right.
after about a year, little things would happen in my discussions with them. And I find out one who's not real good in maintenance is an awesome chef, and he never even told me because he was afraid I wouldn't hire him for that.
Oh,
and
wow.
another one was like an artist, and he could do, you know, he could go in the rooms and paint and do little things that fixed up the rooms like nobody's business. So it taught me to ask people, you know, what's your thing? What do you really love to do? Instead of just filling a space with that body because they wanted a job so bad, I started hearing some of the things that they were capable of doing. And it made a big difference. Enid was in charge of housekeeping. And she was okay at it, but she hated it because she didn't like telling people what to do, and there would be confliction between her and the girls would start yelling at her and everything. And what I found out through
right.
trial and error is she was a hell of a caregiver.
Right.
I mean, she would sit
right.
with people for hours and give to them.
Mm-hmm.
So I
mm-hmm.
think that's one of the things that we have to learn, and it all boils down to what we're talking about today. You have
mm-hmm.
to be who you are. You can't pretend to
mm-hmm.
be somebody else, because
right.
in that pretense, you lose a real important part of who you are. So I
mm-hmm.
support Gay Pride with my heart and my soul. I will
mm-hmm.
be blatantly honest. I'm pretty sure that I have a family member who is not yet aware. Maybe he's aware, but he's not accepting of who he is. And I can see where that's a challenge. I really can, and I appreciate that challenge. And I still don't think we're at a place in time where somebody can just wake up one morning and say, okay, this is who I am. Although you and I have done stories about 7-year-olds who I remember a few years ago We read a story about a little boy who just started wearing girls' clothes. Dad was very upset by it. Mom was endeared but worried, you know. But he just knew who he was and wasn't going to take no for an answer. So, you know, I don't know if you've watched the remake of the Roseanne show with all the fall de rol that happened and she got taken off the show and everything. And everything that's on it right now, it's called The Conners. And everything that's on it right now is reruns. They haven't done any new that I've seen yet. But in it, Darlene, who is gay in real life, the woman that plays Darlene, who's been on The Big Bang and things like that. I can't think of her name right now, but she has a daughter who is transsexual, and she's very young, but she knows who she is. And so, I mean, they opened a lot of. I was upset when Roseanne screwed that up because I thought it was time for a sitcom like that. The oldest daughter is an alcoholic, and I mean, all the things that go with real life. And I thought it was great, but of course now they lost one of the most important players in it, although it's still a show that teaches you something, I think, and makes you laugh. But it's this, you know, Modern Family, a lot of them are doing those kind of things. A lot of them are too silly for me, so I don't watch them very often. But I do like the concept of touching on real life. But I still do see that fear of not being accepted and not being who somehow you thought you were meant to be, even though you can wrap your brain around the fact that that's not who you are. But explaining that to everybody else, I can see where that's got to be a hard road. Now, you mentioned a family member of yours, and I'm aware of that situation. And, I mean, talk about a storybook ending. And wouldn't it be nice if they all worked out like that, right?
Right, right.
I mean, because that's
totally
really...
Yeah, and they're totally okay with who they are. Even though they're married now and they have a heterosexual marriage, you know, a man and a woman, they're still very active in the LGBT community. They still go to events from time to time. So, you know, so they didn't all of a sudden turn their back on that whole thing. And they don't mind letting people know that's who they are. They end up gravitating towards each other, and they're you know, but they've been married, they just had their 10th anniversary. Isn't that amazing? They've been together for a long time. 10 years. Yeah, they just had their 10-year anniversary.
I was thinking it was longer than that. Because I remember when we went to the wedding, you and I were still at Hippocrates. I was still at Hippocrates.
Right.
And I left in 2011.
Oh, so it's probably, well, this year it's going to be their, I guess they're 11. They're 11 years. Because it was in 2008, I think they got married. So, yeah, so it'd be 11 years this year. But, but the bottom line is that, you know, so they're very happy. But they were okay. At no time were either one of them, they were like, you know, because they recognized they were different than other people, but they also knew they were feeling what they were feeling, that kind of a thing. So, you know, so it was it was interesting seeing their evolution and how they went out and came back in, you know. But that's why I'm thinking that there are more bisexuals in our society than there are straightforward homosexuals or lesbians, although there are people that are either just heterosexual or just homosexual. But we are seeing a lot more transgender, and people have to understand that transgender, bisexuality, and all this, it all comes down to the hormones that are released. There's a certain number of weeks of gestation, and whatever hormones are released during that, like, 2 or 3 week period are going to denote how the endocrine system and the brain develop for that individual. And whether or not they become heterosexual, homosexual, bisexual, or if transgender is created by an even larger interruption. So they may be born with a male body, but with the hormones, with the endocrine system and hormones of a woman, or they may be born in a woman's body with the hormone levels of a man. So they're actually, so they don't become bisexual. They actually are in the wrong body. And it's, you know, so when people, if people understand that this is just genetically based, these genetic interruptions can be caused by everything from poor diet to having an illness. Like I'm talking about when the mother is pregnant. Mm-hmm. If the mother gets severely ill during those couple of weeks, it can interrupt the proper hormone levels being being created. If the mother is a smoker, if the mother is a drinker, these things. If the mother is around electronics, believe it or not. So they've tried to analyze what can cause interruptions. And I think the five most prominent interruptions are, you know, drug or alcohol use, illness, or being around too much electronics, where it affects the hormone levels of the mother, which then affects the hormone levels of the fetus that's growing. So it's really that critical that during that 2 or 3 weeks during gestation, that the correct hormone levels are secreted, and if they're not, then you end up with somebody who is genetically different. But once you understand that it's genetic, then it takes the immorality off the plate. It takes the, why would you choose to be? Who would choose to go that direction when there's still so much societal pressure not to go that way? It's ridiculous. It's obviously not a choice. Mm-hmm. And that's why a lot more people are becoming spiritual and moving away from, from organized religions, because so many organized religions have been laden with too much dogma and where the doctrines have been manipulated or there have been things deleted and added to them so they're no longer accurate. They no longer have the spiritual content to them anymore. It's been manipulated by too many hands, mm-hmm. and that's why a lot of people are going to spirituality, because any spiritual practice that you look at today embraces all races, all ethnicities, all other religions, all other genders, and all lifestyles. They embrace us as we're all one, and that's becoming more of a pervasive, that whole mantra, we are one, we are one. They use that in the humanities team in business. When you understand we're really just all human beings. We're not black or white or Christian or Jew or man or woman or whatever, or gay or straight. We're just human beings, and we all have something worthwhile to bring to the table. And the more people that realize that, and the more that we help each other heal and appreciate ourselves and others, the more you're going to start seeing a huge decline in meanness, bullying, crime, and things like that.
Well, I believe that I have always believed in the fact that we are ourselves and supporting ourselves and loving the people in your life is of the utmost importance. And it's none of your business at the end of the day what somebody else does behind closed doors or anything else, and somebody else's feelings, and being able to embrace the things that other people own is a really gracious thing and makes you a better person, mm-hmm. makes you a happier person.
Right.
If everything that's different from you, you think you should fight, you're going to have black eyes every day of your life, because it's just simply none of your business. So,
right.
But we'll be back Wednesday, and for all of my friends out there that I know are celebrating this past month or have celebrated this past month, I support you. Renee's Heart to Heart supports you, and I think you should all live your lives the way you see fit, and allow me to live mine the way I see fit. That's the way it's supposed to
exactly.
be. So God bless everybody. Have a great day. And we'll be back on Wednesday. Thanks, honey. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, Renee. I talk to you soon. Love you, and God bless everyone.
Bye-bye.